are again. It's always such a pleasure. Remember when you tried to kill
me? I'm Levi Weinhagen, and this is the Pratfalls Podcast. The show is a part of the Noise Picnic Network, a community of creative weirdos making podcasts in the Twin Cities. You can go to noisepicnic.com to see other weird and wonderful shows that we have for you there. Before I get into this specific episode, I did want to give a thank you and a shout out to our newest reviewer. Somebody posted a review of the show on iTunes, so thank you to Nanigans. I really appreciate it. And I really like what you wrote. If anyone else wants to write nice things or really funny weird things on iTunes in a review, that makes me happy and it really helps the show. This episode is my conversation with Catherine Kelly. Catherine is a writer, a digital strategist, and newly a travel agent. I've known Catherine for years and years. This is the longest conversation we'd ever had, probably until this point. And we actually have become closer friends, I think, as a result, even of doing this podcast. I really enjoy hearing Catherine talk about how you think about yourself creatively as a writer or not as a writer, her journey to deciding to become a travel agent and finding out how much travel means to her, as well as her talking about raising her boys and balancing her life. I think you guys will dig it. I know I sure did. So here's my conversation with Catherine. So I want to first say that you're Catherine Kelly. That's
you
true.
Want me to say that?
No, I'm saying it. It's happening.
It's
I'm saying
true.
That you're Catherine Kelly.
Okay.
And I want to just, like, call you a writer, but I know you will say, like, well, I'm not writing. That's my impersonation of your voice. Is that flattering? Well, that's what the world hears when you talk.
Is oh, that... good. Perfect.
Well, no, we had discussions about how, you know, what makes you a writer. And
right.
It's all sort of a self-identified, but then does it matter? And,
right.
But
does it all mean?
You have written and write. And I know your brain works like a writer's brain.
Yes.
So I'm going to say
I'll
that.
I'll agree with that. Okay.
And then you do, like, is it digital strategy? Is that the terminology? You're a digital strategist?
Yeah, that's my title.
Which is, like, to me, a magical non-title. Of like, because that means everything and nothing.
Uh-huh.
And
you're, it's true.
And you're, like, officially now a travel agent.
Yes. I'm officially a travel agent.
Those are my views of the buckets of
those are all good
work.
Buckets. We don't have to talk a lot about digital strategy.
That's all I want to focus on.
I'm like, because I'm going to try really hard not to say anything about my current employer.
Right. Yeah, we can look at the past. I mean, you've worked with, like, Target. Like, there's plenty
true.
Of stuff
yeah.
there.
We won't talk about getting laid off. I can mention getting laid off from Target. I think I'm legally bound not to mention that, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is there, like, a non-disclosure?
I think I can say I was laid off, but I can't say anything that would be considered, like, negative about them.
So you can't say anything, then?
It's the best thing that ever happened to me. I refuse to say that, but...
Yeah, I mean, that is...
Like...
Do people say that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I get how you arrive at that conclusion.
Sure.
And it but might be, I refuse to let them have that.
Right. Yeah, they didn't help you.
No.
That's fair.
It's like me thanking them, but which is probably what they want. I don't want to thank them for laying
you
me off.
You should write them a thank you.
Yeah, thank
Thanks,
you so
guys.
Much.
And I still come help do some of the volunteer stuff
right.
that you force us to do mm-hmm. and staff. Mm-hmm. Well, so there's a bunch of different ways for me to start. So the first thing is I've, like, known you for a lot of years,
mm-hmm.
but it's been, like, kind of known you.
Because
mm-hmm. your husband, Butch mm-hmm. Roy, he was one of the first guests I ever had on my podcast.
Mm-hmm.
He runs a theater and does a bunch of weird stuff. So you've been, like, an improv widow.
Yes.
For years.
Yes.
Pretty much the whole time. I mean, close to. You guys have been married. How long have you been?
It's going to be 15 years in August.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So are you... You've been married more of your adult life than not.
Yes.
Essentially. That's what that
well,
is.
Well, yes. We got married when I was 24.
Yeah. And now you're older than that.
I am. 15 years older.
But so I am curious about both your path to the travel agent thing
mm-hmm.
and your relationship to being a writer.
Okay.
I find that interesting. So I want to know if when you were, like, young, mm-hmm. were you writing stories?
Yes.
Has that always been
the
thing?
Do you need me to give you longer answers?
No, I would like... Oh, I guess
yes.
No.
No.
If you could be monosyllabic.
I'm just going to nod and you can
tell. Oh, great. Great. So I'm going to need an animator for this. what is the phrase? Oh, permission to treat the witnesses hostile. That's what I'll.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what did that look like when you were Catherine?
Yes, I wrote Kathy, stories. As you prefer. I was Rudy then. Yes.
Wait, what? Yes. Why?
My dad.
Rudy. What's yes. happening?
My nickname. Anyone who knew me before I was 12 calls me Rudy.
Why?
Because that was my nickname growing up. My dad called me Rudy, R-O-O-D-Y, from Winnie the Pooh, from Kinga and Roo.
Okay.
He called me Rudy. So everybody called me Rudy.
It was just the household name for you.
Yeah, and I switched schools when I was 12, and I stopped introducing myself as Rudy. Like, because, you know, the first day of school when they go through the roll call.
Yeah.
Well, they go through the roll call, and every year I'd have to explain, yes, my name is Catherine, but I go by Rudy. And then I would have to explain it to the whole class. Yeah. Yeah. So I stopped doing that when I switched schools when I was 12 and
Do you feel
grade.
Like that was a moment of maturity? Like you let go of Rudy. Was that like you were growing up? And
I mean, probably because it was 7th grade and that's like when all that was happening. But honestly, at the time, it was like I didn't want to call any more attention to myself than absolutely necessary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's still true, right?
Generally.
You kind of like to not be
Yes. Like to not be the center of
attention. Asking you a bunch of
like,
questions.
Like, I didn't become a writer so that I could, like, stand up in front of people and say stuff.
Right. That's a different kind of writer.
Yes.
You like the idea of writing, and then someone can go have a relationship with the words, and you can be away from them.
Yes. And yet, I keep getting jobs where I have to talk to people all day long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And
it turns out I'm good at faking being an extrovert.
Well, I mean, an extrovert isn't necessarily, an introvert doesn't necessarily mean you, like, don't like talking to people. It just wears you out. Like, it just exhausts you.
I like talking to people that I know.
Yeah.
People I don't know. Not so much.
But have you, is it true you've been a speechwriter?
Yes. The rumors are true. I have been a speechwriter.
What is that job? Like, I have heard of that job.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written certainly what probably would qualify as speeches, but they're monologues because it's theatrical.
For yourself or for other people?
Other people, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But a speechwriter, like, I think of the president.
Like, yes, which is like the height of speechwriting.
Is it? Yeah.
I mean, at least in my opinion. So there's actually a speechwriters conference that happens every year in Washington, D.C., and you can go there and they actually will have, like, White House, former White House speech writers, like, as presenters at the conference.
That feels like the toughest room to speak in front of.
Well, if you consider that they're at, like, the top of their game,
yeah.
and then everyone else is, like, aspiring to be like... I mean, if you think about being a White House speechwriter, and then you're
and
in a
I
room...
I do, all the time.
Right, and then you're in a room with mostly, like, corporate speechwriters, probably,
right.
or freelance. I mean, come on. Like, so I was, like...
You crush
them. I was, like, if there was, like, a spectrum of speechwriting, I was, like, at the easy end of it, because I was writing for... corporate executives within the company.
Hmm.
So, like, I not only knew the message well, but I had some control over the message, you know,
right.
and it was a captive environment, right? Like, so,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't like writing speeches for the president.
Right.
We did try to learn from those, like, real speechwriters, you
sure.
know, in terms of the storytelling
real
and all that.
Speechwriters.
But at the end of the day, like, corporate speeches are rarely truly about telling a story.
Right, it's a dressed up press release
yes.
in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're just, it's another way of getting your key messages across.
But so I'm for real curious about this because you're not really a performer, but you've seen tons of performance
mm-hmm.
just through your husband and also just kind of the world that you live in. So you can write a speech for someone and know, I imagine you got the chance to, like, know a bit about that person's style.
Yeah.
You're writing to their strengths.
Yeah.
If they have any.
Right.
But was there, I mean, is there any space in there for, like, is someone coaching them as well about how to talk? Because there's some executives who, like,
sometimes
they can't talk.
So sometimes very well. Executives will get coaches
yeah.
to do public speaking.
But do you try, I mean, is there a conversation about, hey, you should.
I personally have never had to coach anybody on it, really. I mean, I would normally write to their comfort level, you know?
Or even their,
and,
like,
you can support it with
word size
PowerPoint.
Level.
I mean, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to, like, know that you have to get their voice down. So you wouldn't write something that they wouldn't say.
Right.
And then if they wouldn't say a lot or couldn't explain it very well, you would make sure that they have visuals to help them do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting, like, there's a strength there in you getting into someone else's head.
Maybe, yeah. So I always think of speech writing as, like, you know the movie Heathers?
Of course I do.
And you know Winona Ryder's character, uh-huh. how she can mimic anybody's handwriting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's what I think good speech writers do. Like, you can hear what the person, how the person speaks and the words that they would use, and you can mimic that. And you can have them say pretty much anything as long as you are using the way that they would talk.
One of the, so one of the things I think could be challenging in what you've just described, mm-hmm. like that writing for someone, is you have to write sometimes below your ability as a writer, maybe often, you know, like you can, and not even just like intellectually, but just like ability to tell story.
Yep.
Some of that is you probably have to because it's a speech at a conference and no one cares if there's really the kind of, I mean, they care.
Right.
Emotionally, if they resonate with it, amazing, but that's not what you're being asked to do.
I would say.
So do you have to hold back? Is it like.
Yeah, I would say in general, working in corporate communications, you're not. Like, if you're really a writer working in corporate communications.
It's frustrating.
You're not, well, and that's what you just accept that, like, you're not doing, like, your best writing necessarily. Mm-hmm. You know, I think knowing how to write definitely is important
yeah.
if you're doing corporate communications, but you aren't using all of your strengths every day. You're not working to your highest potential every
right.
day.
But then if you're writing, like, novels, you're not using all your strengths as a corporate speechwriter.
True.
So really, unless you have a character.
A lot fewer bullet points in the novel, yeah.
You should have a, yeah, mostly bullet, just hit these.
I could totally write a novel of bullet points. I could. That feels doable.
People would think that was like artistic.
And I know, but.
Dave Eggers-y.
Can you imagine reading that?
No, no, thank you. That's not the point of a novel. It's about being like in the New York Times bestseller list, right?
Right.
And it's not people reading it.
Right.
That's why people make fun
I'd
of John
Grisham.
I'd like
to Grisham. Think if I wrote one, someone would read it, but.
Are you going to write a novel?
I don't know.
Have you written a novel?
No.
Have you started writing a novel?
Yes.
How far along are you?
Not very.
But you don't know that you'll finish?
I don't know. I have it on my list to finish a draft of my book before I'm 40.
Okay, so let's, I want to, you brought that up. So you have a list.
I have a list.
Of 40 under 40? 40 by 40?
40 by 40.
40-40?
40 things that I want to do before I turn 40.
And just to get the rules, you have to, it's before like the day of your 40th birthday.
Yeah, so. I would say I have to have it done by the end of the day so on my 40th
that,
birthday.
Do you think the week running up to that is going to be pretty intense?
I mean, I'm a little nervous. Yeah, so I only have, well, I should have done the math ahead of time, but, you know, I have less than 2 years. I have about a year and a half. Less than a year and a half to finish everything on the list. And I think I still have like 15 things left on the list.
But that means you've done 25 things, mm-hmm. if my math is correct.
Sounds good to me.
Can you, off the top of your list, rattle off what the things you've done
All
are?
Of them, no.
No? What are you,
Not
what
all
are,
of them.
What are your sort of top items you've done and top items that you're like, either like it gnaws at you all the time or you know it's going to be taken care of, but it's just a matter of...
Well, one of the tough things I've done was attend pastry boot camp at the Culinary Institute in New York.
Sweet. Literally.
It was awesome. It was awesome. So that was something I probably never would have actually followed through on had it not been on the list. So I like those things.
Was it like a 3-day thing?
It was a week.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like Monday through Friday. And it was last February. And we got to work with a French pastry chef all day. And it was awesome. And the Culinary Institute is amazing. It's like Hogwarts, but everybody's wearing a chef outfit. It's amazing. I totally want my kids to go there.
Yeah.
I'm like, you want to be a chef, right?
Do they have any? They like to cook, right?
Aiden likes to cook. Owen yeah. doesn't like to cook.
Yeah.
Aiden likes to cook. And now the Culinary Institute in...
12, 13?
They're 12.
Okay.
Yes. And they have like a 4-year program now, so you actually get your bachelor's.
Oh, nice. So
you're
it's
trained
not just...
as a chef, and you also have your bachelor's when yeah. you come out of it. Yeah.
Because the real chef training still happens in the kitchen.
But that's what's so cool about the Culinary Institute is that it's all kitchens. Like,
yeah.
all the classrooms are kitchens, and then there's all these restaurants there that the students
They're
work in.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, do you know I'm a culinary school dropout?
No.
Have I ever told you
I
that?
Didn't know that.
Yeah, I did a year at just St. Paul Technical College.
Was it? How long was the program?
2 years.
So you're 50% through?
Well, no, I didn't retain much of the ice carving or the...
Did you really have to do ice carving?
Yeah, that was like the last little thing.
Do you think they still teach that? Do chefs have to know how to carve ice?
It was pretty particular. A lot of this was particularly geared toward working in big hotels.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So that was a piece that was like, in the 90s.
I never would expect a chef to know how to carve ice.
Yeah, it was weird. But the baking was the thing I loved. And then,
yeah.
When we started making huge quantities of soup and stuff, I was like, this is fine, but it doesn't really feel artful. Like it felt.
So is that what you wanted to do? You wanted to bake?
No, I didn't know what I wanted to do. No. I was supposed to go play football. Don't try to interview me either, but.
I was curious.
I was supposed to go play football in junior college, and then I was like, I don't like football at all. Like I didn't know it. And then I realized I had zero interest in this, and I was sort of aimless, and I worked in restaurants as a teenager, so then I was like, maybe I should do that.
Yeah, but you didn't like it.
Well, in retrospect, I think I would have liked to be a TV chef. Like, I think I would, I was, if I
We all want to be TV chefs.
Well, yeah. No, I liked it. I liked cooking. Working in restaurants is really intense, and I had lost a bunch of weight, and I come from a family of alcoholics, mm-hmm. terrified of alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And my experience in the kitchen was fat drunks yelling at you who were the head chef.
Huh.
Like every restaurant I worked in, that was my experience. And so I was like, well, if I stay here, then I'm going to gain weight and be a drunk. And that's what I'm already trying to avoid. So I just bailed. And I saw a show at the Britain Workshop, and I was like, oh, there's comedy classes in my city. I didn't even know. And so
changed
my path. But I think the cooking industry has changed a little bit even since '97 or whatever.
Probably a little bit, but
because of TV and entertainment. Mm-hmm.
But I think there's probably still a lot of bad behavior.
Yeah. Well, it's a weird profession.
Right. Well, I was gung-ho, wanted to go to pastry school.
Yeah.
And not when I was actually just coming out of high school, unfortunately, because had I done it then, I probably could have afforded to be a pastry chef. But
waited until you were a mom.
I waited until, the recession hit and I couldn't get any freelance work. And I was like, what do I want to do? I want to learn to be a pastry chef. And I do legitimately want to learn to be a pastry chef, which is why I went to boot camp. But what I also learned was that I don't actually want to be a pastry chef unless maybe I'm on TV or writing about being a pastry chef.
The money's rough.
The money's not good. I mean, for how much it costs to go to school versus how much money you're going to make as a pastry chef, that's a bad ratio. And then the hours you have to work in restaurants is just to sign up for that when you're in your 30s and have small children is crazy.
Yeah. And you're not crazy.
I mean, not about that. I'm not crazy when it comes to agreeing to work stupid hours.
Yeah. What's the draw of the pastry chef to you?
I love pastry, so I just love being around it. I just want to be around it. And
you can just go to bakeries, you don't have to get training. You don't even have to buy stuff. I mean, they're going to get annoyed after
a while. No, but you could get paid to be around it.
Yeah.
So basically everything in my life is figuring out how could I get paid to do something that I just want to do anyways. So it's my whole philosophy of getting free stuff for stuff you do anyway.
Yeah.
That's one of my great things that I love about life is that you can get free stuff for stuff you do anyway.
Yeah.
And so basically, if you can get a job doing something you'd be doing anyway, I know I'm the first person that ever thought
of it. No, I think
find
it's really,
a job
really
that you
true.
Love. Yes. And then I didn't do that at all.
I know you don't really want to talk about your day job.
Right.
Which makes it so attractive to talk about. But I am curious, so you have these boys.
I do.
I
have these boys.
You gave life to and are responsible for.
Yes.
And so I'm sure some of the motivator for what you do for work and what you do with your other time is, what does my family need financially to keep going?
Mm-hmm.
And, you have a husband who runs a theater, so, he's not bringing any money into the situation.
Right.
He's doing what he loves.
Yes.
All the time.
It's difficult for both people to be doing what they love, I think.
Financially, you mean?
Financially, yes.
And even time-wise, too, right?
Probably.
Because, if you were going to really be a pastry chef...
Yeah, I would say...
your kids would raise themselves. You'd have feral yeah, boys.
But I would say even if I didn't have kids, the hours that people work in restaurants do not appeal to me. Maybe I would be totally different if I didn't have kids, so maybe I wouldn't feel that way. But I don't feel like the reason I'm not going to be a pastry chef is because of my family situation.
Mm. But a pastry chef isn't the same as being like a line cook.
No. You're right, it's not.
Different equipment. Yes. We're all saying profound things. You're saying do what you love. For money.
I came up with this idea.
And I'm saying,
get a job that you like.
And mine's different jobs are different things. So like,
yes, a line cook does something different than the pastry
would
chef.
Would you like to go on a speaking tour with me? It's
yes.
called the Stating the Obvious Tour.
I don't want to speak, though. I'll write
your... Oh, right,
your...
great, good. This is going to work out beautifully. What I was trying to say is, I think the pastry chef in a restaurant can do a lot of their work at a different time than when meal service happens.
Yes. They can do it at like
making food to order.
3 a.m.
Right. And that's what happens.
Or at night if you're working like, yeah.
Or if you're making for a bakery where people go on their way to work, you get there at 2 a.m.
yes.
and you bake.
And I almost actually worked. So the Queen of Cakes in Edina, when I was on my quest to become a pastry chef or figure out like how to become a pastry chef without going to pastry school.
Which is a great name of a book, by the way. If you could take that project and turn it into a book.
If I could become a pastry chef without going to pastry school.
Then write the book, How to Become a Pastry Chef
yes.
Without Going to Pastry
yes.
School.
Yes, well, so I met with the woman who owns Queen of Cakes, and she was actually, like, open to letting me come, like, learn how they
like
make
apprentice.
Cakes in the kitchen there. But it was hours, like, 2 a.m.
Yeah.
to 10 a.m., which, and my kids were pretty little then, so that did seem completely insane to me.
Right.
So I didn't do
But maybe you just didn't want it bad enough.
Probably. I just want to be around the cakes. I don't want to get up at 2 a.m.
Right. They're still going to be there.
Right, exactly.
Later on.
Butch and I were just talking about how I should open a bakery that doesn't open until like 4 p.m.
I think it would do gangbusters. Yeah. You have fresh stuff.
Yeah.
People are hungry after work. Their willpower has gone of their anti-gluten nonsense. And they're suddenly like, I just need... You know, donuts are everywhere right now. Like, that's an explosion.
Yeah.
Let's get this funded.
All right, good.
Well, I want to hear about, I honestly could ask you about pastry chef stuff for a long, long time. Because you're the first person who I heard about the idea of putting a pie inside of a cake from, too. I know that became like a whole meme and a trend, but I think you're the first person I saw like post on the internet, like, there's something called
the
cake.
Yes.
And I was like, that seems gross, but...
it was not gross.
No, of course. It's pie and cake together.
The pookie was better, though.
That's a cookie in there as well?
It's a pie inside a cookie. It was pretty good.
How is that not a huge mess?
It is a huge mess.
Oh, okay.
Did you see the photos?
Yeah.
It was a huge mess. I mean, imagine trying to put cookie dough around a pie.
I don't want to.
But it tasted good.
Yeah. But you can just eat a pie and a cookie.
No, that's not as fun.
Okay. I don't want to debate this. This will just be an ongoing issue.
Okay.
But the travel agent thing.
Yes.
So you're like just became like, is it certified? What's the...
Yeah, so you can get certified. I am certified as a travel agent. However, you don't actually have to get the certification that I got to become a travel agent. To legally sell travel, you just have to be licensed. Like you have to have, it's called an IATA number, and you're going to... probably want me to tell you what that stands for, and I should know.
Or just what it means.
Because I got certified, you know?
Yeah.
And they taught us that.
This is not a test.
The International Association of Travelers something.
Association.
Yeah.
Probably again.
So anyway, you have to have this IATA number to be a travel agent and be able to sell people
travel agents.
Tickets.
International Association of Travel Agents.
Maybe that's what it is.
I've decided.
That's really obvious. It's probably what it is.
Well, did you know?
But, so I took this, do you want to hear the story of how I became a travel agent?
Yeah.
So
I mean, is it full of like plot twists and...
No, not, I mean...
Adventure?
I don't know how much adventure there is. I can tell you that I've always loved travel and I always say things like, wouldn't it be great if I could get paid to plan trips because it's something that I do anyway?
Right. And then you get to free trips too, which
right.
you also love.
Trips. Yes. Reasons to travel, more trips. And... Then when I got laid off in June, and I had resources available
Which
that
is
were
the
like
best thing that ever happened. Yeah. Sorry, getting up myself.
I had all these resources available to go to training that could be, that would be paid for through Minnesota Job Partners, which is like the greatest organization. I had no idea they existed until I got laid off. But they receive grants when there's mass layoffs, and then they're able to fund training for the people that got laid off to help them get jobs. And so you have to identify a goal when you go in and meet with your advisor there. And I was like, had been working in this weird digital innovation operations pseudo marketing space, and I was debating what path I wanted to go down next, and it occurred to me that I should actually try to work in the travel agent industry, but like possibly using all the skills that I had already acquired in corporate America. And but I had no experience working in the travel industry, which, you know, generally people want.
Well, you've traveled a lot.
I've traveled a lot, but I don't think that gets you a job as like a product manager at a like travel software company. So I looked into, you know, like how do you even learn about the travel industry? Like what do you need to know about it? And that's when I found this TAP certification. So that's travel agent proficiency exam, the TAP exam. And it's like baseline, like this is the entry level stuff you need to understand about travel to become a travel agent. But I was really intrigued by the fact that that existed. And so I was able to have that training paid for through the assistance program, because I really was applying for jobs with travel companies. And that actually did help me get interviews. Just having some knowledge of like the weird technology that they use in the travel industry.
Because it's not technology that people use for any other things.
No,
still,
it's
right?
super outdated.
Yeah.
The global distribution system, the GDS, is what, like, the common database that everyone uses to book flights and things. And it's like green screen. It's terrible.
It's built on like duct tape and wishes.
But so I went through the whole class, and then during the class, I realized that I actually could be a travel agent.
Without having that work experience.
Well, I didn't set out to be a travel agent because I didn't think that there actually even still were travel agents.
Yeah.
But it turns out there are, and there's actually a need for them because everyone's overwhelmed by how much information is available on the internet. And it turns out lots of people don't like planning trips. But through the class, I realized it's actually pretty easy to become an independent travel agent. And if then it's up to you to like sell yourself, right? And so I at least have the passion that comes with it. So, and I love planning trips, and I'm pretty good at it. So.
Yeah. And you have a better understanding of if there are rules and restrictions about planning travel or people's travel.
Yeah.
Than they might have.
Yes.
You can help someone establish a timeline. I want to go here at this time. You can go like, well, do you need shots or a passport? Or?
Well, and once you get affiliated with a host agency to get your IATA number, you have access to a bunch of different resources that a regular person doesn't have access to. So it's just, I always think of it like, it's not that I have different information necessarily than anyone else, but I have better ways to get at it so I can tell you things more easily.
And you're not frustrated looking for it. I think that's the big difference, too.
Right. I actually like doing that stuff.
So here's this question, though, that seems obvious. I feel like a travel agent is going to have to talk to a bunch of strangers. Success means more stranger talking.
It's rough, right?
Do you think that's true?
What is the job where I don't talk to anyone?
Writer, just alone at a desk.
But that didn't work out.
You're not dead.
When
I'm not trying to talk you into anything.
Here's the deal. I mean, I guess if I suddenly woke up and was like, could be a best-selling author and didn't ever have to talk to anyone, I might take that path. Yeah. But even when I was a journalist,
that's a lot of talking to
which
people
is my first job writing.
Yeah.
I had to talk to people all day long. But that was different because when you're a journalist, when you're interviewing somebody, it's different. You have structure, you know why you're there.
Yeah, the
relationship's
really clean.
You have questions to ask them.
Yeah.
It's not like trying to build relationships with people in corporate environments.
That does sound really unpleasant. It's the in corporate environments that really does it. Because, like, build relationships with people, like, that's humanity.
Right. Authentic relationships, I like.
Oh, authentic.
I like authentic relationships. But it sometimes can be tricky to try to build authentic relationships in work environments.
Because everyone's a bunch of fakes.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the work environment.
Very true. So there's this idea. So I'm having this weird thing in my brain. I've had other good conversations with you, but the way you're talking about, I'm really interested in being, in baking,
mm-hmm.
being a pastry chef,
mm-hmm.
or I love travel, so maybe a travel agent is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I went to cooking school because I loved cooking, and I now still love baking, and it just turned out I didn't want to work in that industry. I just like doing and knowing how to do that thing.
Right.
I became a certified personal trainer because I was really interested in fitness and how to get healthy.
I didn't know that.
And then I tried to work with people, and I didn't like it at all. Because they wouldn't do the things I said that you need to do. They
yeah.
just were like, but there's no magic. And then I was like, I'm angry. I'm going to leave now. So there's this like searching quality of,
yes.
but also I'm curious if you are aware or if you think there's something where you have a bunch of interests and you're trying to figure out how they can be jobs. But there's always this risk that making a thing into a job can ruin the thing for you, too. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's not,
mm-hmm.
Like, you love traveling, but does that mean you love helping other people travel?
Right.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe
it remains to be seen.
It becomes a sad thing where you're like, so now I'm really aware of where I'm not going. Well, I said another, like, is that on your mind as you think about this and as you look back at the things you've sort of invested in? And
no, I don't think I worry about ruining the thing by doing it for my job as much as I worry that like I won't be good at it.
Oh.
Like if you really like something and then you try to do it as your job and it turns out you're not very good at it, like that sucks.
That's upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you seem like you seem very competent.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Just generally
Is
or
that not
travel
a,
planning.
That's a compliment, right?
Yes.
You seem very competent.
I mean, competent is sort of like a baseline.
It is.
But,
I know. You haven't poked yourself in the eye at all yet. No, but my perception of you and the things that you do and have done is, I want to say you're very able, but again, I know that just means like...
It's okay.
I don't know what it is. It's a... I would just trust you to kind of do anything. Like, I have this perception that, like, Catherine could figure that out and learn that thing and then do that thing. It's a mixture of, like, inner confidence and then, like, you seem actually pretty open to trying something that you're not sure you can do.
Right.
Why are you like that? Do you see a connection to, like, how you were brought up to, like... Were you supported and encouraged in all your endeavors? And is it that simple, or?
No, I don't think I grew up thinking like, I'm sure I was told you can do anything, you can
yeah,
be whatever you want to be.
Which isn't even true.
Right? But I kind of think, you can kind of do almost anything if you actually want to put work into it.
Hmm.
This is my problem. I don't always want to put all the work into it. But like, if there's really nothing you can't learn to
yeah.
do. Which I do think that's true, and that's why I think it's fun to go learn things
like pursue something.
And try to do them.
Yeah.
But so far, I still haven't found like the thing that strikes the right balance between like I like to do it, and also it provides the security that I need to have in my life.
So, and I feel good at it.
Yeah, and I feel good at it.
Because I think
I wouldn't like it. If I didn't feel good at it, I wouldn't like it.
Right.
So.
But
yeah.
that I think that you articulated something really important of. Trying something that you love or think you love and then not really having a faculty for it
right.
is really disappointing. Like
yeah.
It's a really upsetting
right,
thing.
Right, because you love something and it seems like it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And then you're like, this isn't fun.
And then you're not sure, will it get fun? Will I get mm-hmm. better? And will my better still be pretty lousy or will it be good enough that it's fun?
Right.
I mean, I feel that way when I see someone play a guitar. Like, I have a guitar.
Mm-hmm. I also have a guitar.
But how much time would I need to put into it where it would feel, like, laid back and fun to play it rather than just, like, a reminder that I can't do anything ever?
Right.
So there's some nice shared baggage is all I think
good,
that's
good. good.
There's two things. I'm interested in the motherhood thing that you've been really into lately.
For 12 years.
It's all you ever do.
Yeah.
And I still want to get back to your list a little bit.
Okay.
Because I just find that interesting. And I...
All right.
I can't pick, but I'm gonna do the list because that's the last thing I said. And okay. It's like when you offer a child two things, whatever's second, it's usually
okay.
But
you offered it to yourself.
I did. Yeah. You don't need to be here for this. I think that the idea of doing a list of 40 things you can do by your time you're 40 could seem like really hokey. Like, mm-hmm. And it could also be like a huge bummer because mm-hmm. there's like, oh, here's a list of stuff I wanted to do and didn't accomplish. And
right.
Like, that's the sad end of a movie where a guy's like, oh,
that's
I didn't
That's why
do...
you have to finish it.
Is that part of the sharing it? Like you put it out yes. publicly?
Yeah. So the 40 by 40 list started, there's a writer named Patty Dye who, it's D-I-G-H.
Ooh, is that Irish?
Probably.
Right.
I don't know her personally, but she had a blog a few years ago called 37 Days that she started about kind of being mindful and present. And it was back when blogs were huge and I read a lot of them. Anyway.
So like 08, 07.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And she had, I actually think she had a 50 by 50 list, if I'm remembering correctly, a 50 by 50 list, but her list was 50 things she was going to do in the year before she turned 50.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that seemed crazy to me.
It's like a thing a week.
As far as I know, she did not actually finish that list, but it was a good goal. But it inspired me on my 32nd birthday to make my 40 by 40 list because it felt manageable to only have to do five things a year, right? And then, of course, I was really gung-ho at first, and then I slacked off for like a year or two. So now I'm making up for it. But I like the idea of stating goals. That's been something that I realized, I didn't know this before, but that like I wasn't good at articulating goals for myself, right? And I didn't grow up, I don't think I grew up having like that sense of accomplishment of setting a goal and achieving it. I didn't play sports or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like I always just kind of like went through things and I was good at some stuff and not that good at other stuff. And like, but it was never really deliberate about saying like, I'm going to accomplish this thing that I want to do. And plus, after having kids, it's harder to prioritize things that you want to do for yourself and not for them.
Because your own things aren't as loud as the human.
Right. And just like the constant mother guilt of like you should be worrying about them instead of what you want to do.
And you have twin boys, it should be stated.
I have twin boys, yes. And when I made the list, they were six maybe. So, yeah. Was that good math? 30, yeah. Okay.
Story checks out.
So I made the list just to like write down. I thought it would be fun to write down a bunch of stuff I wanted to do. But then as I started actually doing this stuff, I learned that it's actually really fun to say you want to do something and then do it. See, this is another very profound
No, but thought. You mean more than just doing a thing is to go like, here's a thing I want to do.
And then you actually like make sure it happens.
There's some anticipation, there's an investment in it. Yeah,
yeah, because that's one thing I think that's part of why I love travel too. Like you can be deliberate and actually like create experiences in your life. And you can say, I want to have that experience. And then you can actually go make sure that you actually have that experience. Mm. You don't have to have things just happen to you.
That also is simple and profound.
And I will tell you, although we're not in therapy currently, that like I do think I grew up feeling like things just happen to you, right?
Yeah.
Like it's just the way it is and you survive, right? No, I didn't grow up in like some horrible, heartbreaking like setting, but like that's just the way it is. And so to realize as an adult that you actually can decide what you want to have happen.
Well, okay, so now apply that. How do you apply that to your boys? Like, you know, it wasn't clearly sort of established for you.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what goal setting looks like. Here's what hard work will result in.
Mm-hmm.
I have this question about should I make my daughter take a music lesson and really force her to practice,
mm-hmm.
not so she can learn that instrument, but so she can learn that if you do the thing, you'll learn the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Are you just modeling for your kids? Do you feel like you have changed how you think about this in motherhood now that you've heightened your own awareness of goal setting and achieving things?
Yeah. I mean,
do you talk about it with them?
Yeah, they know about the list. We talk about the list.
Yeah.
Everybody knows about the list. But I definitely think it's a good example for them. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I've had like a direct application to their lives. I mean, obviously I would encourage them to set goals.
You didn't make them do a 10 by 10 or anything?
No. But they're still at an age, I don't know, at 12, what they, like, I think, I guess I'm not sure at what age you actually think in terms of, like, setting a goal that you really want to accomplish and working toward it. Right. I would obviously encourage them to do that, but I can't think of a time where they've had, like, a goal that I've, you know, like, I don't walk around like, what are your goals? But I do, I do things like when we plan trips, so we go on family trips, and I do always ask, like, what's one thing you want to make sure you do on the trip, or what's one, you know, because there's always, and that's one thing I think I got from becoming a mother, too, is, like, that constant reflection on everything that you just did, you know, like, even when they're little, and you're like, so today was a good day, and today we did blah, 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 you know, just, like, reciting that stuff, but, like, being able to now think proactively, like, you're going to want to be able to look back on having done all of those things. So trying to teach them going into the situation, even if it's just a trip, but yeah. Like, you know, what's the thing you're going to wish you had done?
Yeah, that's funny. We, you know, I got to go with my wife and daughter to Hawaii in October, and we definitely, like, each of us did a, what's the thing you for sure want to do on this trip?
Yeah.
Because we knew it would all be, like, awesome, but it would be a thing. And my daughter wanted to go to a luau, which I wouldn't, you know, we may have still done. I would not have wanted to go to a luau if she had said that. And it is still now her favorite thing that happened. And I think part of it was having her state, I want to do this thing that
and
I've seen in TV shows.
Yeah.
And it was everything.
Yeah.
And it was so, like, totally a cinematic experience. But I think there was real value in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that, too, with, like, I wanted to, and there's one thing I wanted to do that I didn't even do, and I still am a little like, oh, I wish I had done that thing. Just, you know, it's fine.
It's fine. It wasn't that important.
It's fine. I just have to go back to Hawaii. I know someone who can help me set that trip up.
Yes, right.
But I didn't, that was sort of subconsciously noting that, but I, until you said that, I wasn't really aware that that thing was happening. And that feels like a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
For him, for her too, or you know, for your.
I think it's good. I mean, whether they know they're learning it or not, I think it's good to learn that you can decide to do something and do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it's out of your control.
Yeah.
For the, I mean, there are things that are out of your control, but a lot of things you actually can make happen if you want to.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's something also really simple but profound. Like, so there's tons of stuff you have no control over, which is like part of why being alive can be terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But then. Trying to ignore that stuff and just do the things you're able to make happen.
Yeah,
that seems it seems obvious, but
no, I think that's totally true, and I think that's part of the list too. Is I mean, if you look at things that have changed in my life since in the 6.5 years since I made the list, like lots of things have changed that I didn't have control over all of it. But like, you have this thing that you at least wrote down and are kind of sticking to. I mean, I've changed a few things over the years, but like, you know, it's like I still want to do those things regardless of everything else that's happening.
What's the next thing you're going to do on your list?
Well, I have on my list to go to Paris with my husband because I have been to Paris twice without him. And it's a very romantic city, you may have heard.
Yeah.
And both times I was there, I had wished that he was there.
Yeah.
So
you had different guys you would go with.
I was there with friends both times. But, yeah, so that's on my list, and I'm going to be accomplishing that in August for our anniversary.
Nice.
And actually, I have go to Italy on my list, too. So we're accomplishing both of those things in one trip.
Are there things on the trip that you could also would be on the list?
I don't think
How
so, but that's a good question.
This trip?
I love that game. We've done that many times of trying to figure out, like, because so I have eat Key Lime Pie in Key West.
Yeah, it's hard to do in Italy.
Yeah, right. But I also have spend Christmas somewhere warm. So we've talked about should we spend Christmas in Key West, right?
Just have, like, lobster for Christmas.
Yeah, I would totally do that, although I've heard Key West is not super kid-friendly.
Well, they're 12 now. Like, they're not even really kids anymore.
There might be the worst age to be around a bunch of, like, drunken beach dwellers. Like, I don't really want to bring them to Margaritaville.
You're worried they'll waste away?
Yeah.
It's a real risk.
They're at, like, a bad age for that stuff, yeah.
This is weird. You might not. In some ways, I think you can look at parenthood and say, this is keeping me from doing some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it's totally true. But I think also sometimes it's in a good way. So, like, for me, having a daughter has made me less self-involved. Still plenty self-involved.
Mm-hmm.
But just inevitably it's forced me to look outward more, mm-hmm. starting with her, and then because the world is going to be her problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, it really activated my feminism. Like, I was a passive feminist, and then I had a daughter, yeah. and I was like, oh, crap, we need to fix everything. Before I was like, yeah, we should be equal. And then I'm like, no, guys, we can't talk right. about it anymore.
Right.
But it also, like, you know, I'm not going to, like, go and try and become a writer on a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I would have.
Right.
Like, if I had the creative confidence I have now 15 years ago, I would probably go try something like that. But now I have this tiny person who, like,
right.
needs me to take care of her. And while she would be supportive of my decisions, I just, it's ridiculous. So I wonder about what is your perspective on that, like, I don't know, like, not resenting your children or how you view the relationship to your kids and the sort of decisions you make about the work that fulfills you.
So,
it was a bunch of
meandering. I don't view my kids as having limited me at all.
Hmm. So you're better than me.
Yeah, so I guess I just wasn't as self-involved as you.
That is definitely true.
No, I don't know. I just never thought of them that way. But I don't have, like, a thing that I wish I would have done. I mean, I'm sure I would have, my life would probably be different.
Nope.
But same. I never felt like.
You'd just be lying a lot. But can't, see, kids.
My whole thing with needing to be financially secure is really my deal.
It's not about.
I need more money because I have kids.
Yeah.
But I don't, like, blame them for my obsession with having right. financial security. You know what I mean? So, they probably did make that value for me, like, much stronger. You know, like, oh, my God, I have to keep them secure, too. But I think I would still be battling with, like, here's what I want to do, but there's no financial security in that, regardless of if I had kids. I just wouldn't need as much money if I didn't have kids, but that's not really their fault.
But you might have fancier stuff.
I doubt it.
So did, I know there was no tragedy, but was there financial insecurity growing up?
No.
Like, not at all? Mm-hmm. So you don't know where, I mean, it's,
where
I, it's
the
good.
Crazy
it's practical.
Part came from? I mean, my mom is, like, super fiscally responsible. Hmm. She was a single mom.
That'll
and
do it, yeah.
still managed to save up enough money to retire at age 55.
Nice.
Yeah.
My mom was a single mom and lives in my basement now. So that's another way to go.
Well, so I have that expectation, I think. Like, I constantly have, like, no matter how financially responsible I think I could be, I still probably wouldn't meet her level of expectation mm-hmm. in that regard. So, I mean, obviously I get some of it from her. But, I don't know. No, I didn't grow up, like, destitute, you know,
yeah.
wishing that. I think it's just, I don't know, it's just like a crazy thing.
I don't think it's that crazy. You want
well, I mean,
stability.
It's obviously a good, it's a good type of crazy, so it's acceptable.
Right.
But, like,
you're right, it is society's right. like, that crazy is fine.
But it's but, almost like a justification, like, you know, it's okay then to be scared to try things mm-hmm. that you don't know if are a good idea because you're like, but I need financial security, so
you're
I'm just going to stay over
security.
Here. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, if Butch had my fear of not being financially secure, he never would have started the theater.
No.
And, like, that's, like, I'm glad he doesn't have that fear. I mean, it would be, you know, we're, like, it would be good if we could, like, meet more in the middle maybe sometimes, but, like, I just don't think, like, I don't think that fear necessarily, like, helps me. Like, obviously it keeps us financially secure, so that's a good thing.
Right, but you don't actually feel secure even if you are.
Right, it's a constant, like, am I going to stay financially secure?
Maybe, I mean, because your mother helped create a little bit of that, how do I live up to this, you should lower the bar a little so your kids aren't worried about having
right.
everything together. Like, maybe you could do some
I totally don't have everything
gymnastics.
Together, so no. I would, like, hopefully they don't think that I do.
They can see that you're
yeah.
Just
I would. It's so hard, right? Because, like, you do want your kids to grow up and be, like, productive citizens, I think, in
yeah.
some sense. But, like, I wouldn't want them to have to feel like they should make choices based purely on how much they're going to get paid.
Right.
You know? But that can become a reality.
Yeah, and I do feel, I mean, it must be, even just from what Butch is doing, like, he's modeling
Yes.
Go make your dream.
Yeah.
Even
so
if
they have
you have
both.
To work a bunch of other weird jobs sometimes to,
right.
you know, you'll run a theater, but also you'll have to have a bunch of side hustles every once in a while to make sure you can keep doing the thing that is helping other people sort of live out their dreams too.
So I think however they end up feeling about it, they'll come upon it on their own.
Like, yeah.
They've been exposed to all ends of the spectrum.
Do you feel like you're... So it does... I mean, I take from a lot of the things you said that you're thinking about the decisions you make are influenced by having your sons, like having kids, but not in a way that sort of restricts it in any way. It's just you're aware that your decisions are bouncing off that one element of your life.
Yeah.
But do you have thoughts about where you want them to end up beyond just, like, be productive citizens?
No, I just want them to be happy.
Like, just nothing else?
Yeah. I mean, healthy, too.
one healthy.
No, I'd like them both to be healthy and happy. I mean,
this isn't a binding contract.
It'd be great if they didn't have to, like, live with us forever, too.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it.
Yeah. That's enough. I mean, I feel like that seems like the normal answer.
I want them to be like people that go out and do things that make them happy.
So then what do you have a vision for your future?
No.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
I don't have any vision for my future. No, I don't know. I don't know what I am like in this place between... wanting to feel like, and I do think the whole layoff thing was like just a little bit of a, like,
it's a jolt. Yeah.
Yes, it's a jolt.
Like the cola.
I think I would love to feel like I was really good at something again. Hmm. And at
what
the same time,
what did you feel really good at? Not that you weren't, but what?
I don't know. That's a tough question.
I mean, I have so much I'm in that where I'm just like, I want to feel amazing or good at something at least. And right now,
it's nice to feel like you're an expert or something. Yeah. So I don't know. But I feel like I have this tension between like pursuing, you know, a career in something where I can feel like I'm an expert at something based on the experiences that I've had up until this point, and then this pull to be just totally independent and free from all of that and wanting to be, like, I mean, I am a writer. I can write. And as a writer, because less and less people can write these days.
No. That does not stop them.
No. But you can actually make a career as a freelance writer, mm-hmm. and that can allow you to travel and do all kinds of things and be free from, you know, the structure of, like, really being married to some career path in, like, you know. So they're two totally opposite sides of the spectrum.
Yeah.
But so
you're
I think.
Torn.
Yeah, I mean, one of them offers a lot more security than the other one.
Financial, though.
Yeah.
Because I think there's like emotional security too. Like there's a weird. There's other. Not that you're. Broken.
Tell me more about emotional security.
I don't know. I have this perception of people who are feeling fulfilled more throughout their day. But I don't know that.
Do you think they spend less money? Because,
see,
that's what I need to do is spend less money. Here's the thing, though. I like to spend money on eating and traveling.
Those are the best things.
I know. If I gave those things up, I really...
Well, what you're trying to do is find a way to make eating and traveling your job.
Yeah.
So someone else pays for that stuff.
Yeah.
And then you write about it or do something about it.
Yeah. I'll do something about it.
And you don't even need them to pay you that much if they can just cover the eating and traveling.
Right. I mean,
thing.
As long as we have a place to live.
Right. A houseboat.
Right. Yes.
Or an upper floor on the theater.
Right. We can always move into the theater.
Yeah. We got that fallback. It's a great fallback.
I don't think we can. I don't think I'm allowed to say that, just so you know.
No, it's not legal, nor would it be a good idea for anyone. Then there's a different stability challenge to that as well. Well, so just like nuts and bolts, you just launched like a new website for...
I did.
Your travel agent work.
CadenceandClover.com.
CadenceandClover.com. Where does that come from?
Well, I came up with it. So if you've tried to start a new website lately, it's real tricky to find the domain that is available. So my name is an alliteration, Catherine Kelly, and I was thinking about alliteration.
Those are both K's. Yeah.
Those are both K's, and Cadence and Clover are with C's. Mm-hmm. But I was trying to think of words that could be applicable to both writing and travel, because this was when I was still unemployed and trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I was like, if I'm going to start a website or a company, like, I got to have it be flexible. Mm-hmm. So I came up with Cadence and Clover because Cadence speaks to words and music. And Clover is like a four-leaf clover or a shamrock. Mm-hmm. And I, when I talk about travel, love Ireland and I love Las Vegas. And the thing that those two places have in common is luck.
That's beautiful. Is that description on the website?
Something like that is on the website, yeah.
More copy out of it.
Most people laugh when I say that, so that was nice that you said beautiful.
People shouldn't be laughing. I think that is really lovely. I mean, because honestly, so not that long ago we had a conversation about Las Vegas and slot machines.
I was wondering if we were going to talk about slot machines.
I was trying to avoid it, but you brought up Las Vegas.
We didn't even talk about slot machines the whole time we talked about financial security.
Well, I know.
Right?
But you play like nickel slots. Like
But here's the thing about nickel
risk.
Slots.
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, I would love for you to believe that it's really low risk. I mean, it is low risk. If you set a budget, it's okay. It's okay as long as you set a budget. But you got to bet all lines or you're never going to win anything. So if you bet all lines on a nickel slot machine, you're easily betting, 50 cents every spin.
That could add up.
Yeah. That's why you have to win.
Yeah. All I was saying, instead of you just revealing more of your slot machine nerd, is because of the way you framed your relationship to slot machines in Vegas, I have had a more positive sort of view of that place and those things just from that. And so I think that's the same thing that you're doing when you just talked about that. I mean, who talks about a relationship between Las Vegas and Ireland in any positive way? Maybe some gangster ties. Like, that's the only thing I could see someone doing.
Right.
And to you, they're both like these lovely, magical places full of possibility and chance.
Yes.
And I think
that's
an easy sell to someone about Ireland, and not an easy sell to a lot of people about Las Vegas, but they both are about drinking and making up the story of who you are and who you want to be. Like,
that's good.
I mean,
you could do PR.
No, I'm just reframing what you just said. That's what I can do. I think, I mean,
yes. You. So my dream, I would love to be paid
open
to
open a
plan
casino
trips.
In Ireland.
No, I don't want to run a casino. That would ruin the magic. But I would love to plan trips to Las Vegas and Ireland exclusively and possibly go on the trips.
It's very niche.
Yes. But I'm pretty fun to go to Las Vegas with.
What do you offer on a trip to Las Vegas?
Excitement about the slot machines, mostly. Yes, and just running commentary.
I want you to be real careful about offering yourself to go with someone on a trip to Las Vegas.
All right, noted.
I feel like it's a slippery slope.
But I do think that we should record a podcast while playing slot machines.
That sounds so noisy.
That's true. It would be like
they go
that.
Bonkers. Like yeah. They do so many sound and visuals now.
They do.
Not like the good old days in my day.
Those machines are boring.
Just the cherries and the...
Yeah, that's boring.
I'm sorry.
It's boring.
What's your favorite slot machine? That's a good sort of towards the end.
That's a really hard question, but...
I'm asking.
I'm kind of in love with... Well, they change all the time, but I'm kind of in love with Willy Wonka right now. The Willy Wonka slot machines.
What sets it apart from the other slot machines?
I like the Oompa Loompa bonus because it occurs... This is a trend in slot machines. These bonuses that just occur randomly. You don't have to, like, hit something for them to occur. But the Oompa Loompa bonus, I've won a lot of money on it, so that helps me.
Do they sing their song?
Uh-huh, of course they do. Well, that's one of the greatest things about the Willy Wonka slot machine is that when you win, you get clips from the movie.
Oh.
Like, you know, him saying things like, "You did it, Charlie. I knew you could do it."
Yeah.
Yeah.
This might ruin it for you. I have another way we can watch clips from Charlie.
It's very inspirational.
You can just watch the movie.
No.
Anytime.
But what if you could watch the movie while you're winning money?
It's true. Yet again, you sold me on Las Vegas.
You don't even have to go to Las Vegas. We have casinos here.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Brittany
has a slot machine, but as much as I want to love it, and I do love it, but it doesn't pay out very well.
What does it do, though?
What does it? Well, it plays her songs.
Yeah, that's all it is. Are you a huge Britney fan?
I mean, no.
I feel like that's a... Do you want to end on a lie?
I did go to Las Vegas and see her perform.
Did you pay for the meet and greet?
No.
Okay.
I don't think that was an option.
Trust me, that's always an option.
I did not get to meet and greet her, but I did go see her perform.
Recently?
Like a couple years ago when her show first opened in Vegas.
How was it?
It's pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
She
wasn't in as good of shape a couple years ago as she is now.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard. She's a working mother.
Right.
How do you stay fit?
I would think dancing every night would help, but...
Well, depends what you're eating, though, right?
I mean, well, I do love Brittany. She has a special place in my heart.
Yeah, so there's a quality. Mm-hmm. There was a really good episode of The Mystery Show about her. Mm. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. a podcast. I'll tell you off this.
Oh, okay, good.
So real rambly at the end. Yeah. I apologize. What I want to do is ask where people can go to find out about things you're doing on the internet. So where is the Cadence and Clover? Is it just cadenceandclover.com?
It's cadenceandclover.com.
Is that the best thing? You don't tweet that much.
I don't tweet much at all.
No.
And I'm on Instagram, but...
It's just your kids.
You're mostly getting pictures of my dog on Instagram.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. The dog. Yes.
Yes. Cadenceandclover.com would be the best place because I have my new travel blog.
Yeah.
And I'm just starting Twitter and Instagram for Cadence and Clover, so we'll see how that goes.
Okay. But do you have those names? Is Cadence and Clover?
Yeah, Twitter handle? There's links on my website, but yeah.
Okay. So people should go there and follow those
you
things.
You should. That would be great.
And they should come reach out to you about trips.
I know. I would love to plan your trip.
Yeah. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I can't wait till I have a trip for you to plan.
I'm excited for that, too.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking to me, Catherine.
Thank you, Levi.
Well, here we are again. It's always such a pleasure. Remember when you tried to kill me twice? How we laughed and laughed, except I wasn't laughing. Under the circumstances, I've been shockingly nice. You want your freedom, take it. That's what you're counting on. I used to want you dead, but now I only want you gone. Was a lot like you, maybe not quite as heavy. Now little Carolyn is in here too. Day they woke me up so I could live forever.